Lime Street Blues, written by Maureen Lee and read by Maggie Ollerenshaw.
Part 1. Chapter 1. 1939 to 1940.
Rose, Mrs. Corbett bellowed. Where are you?
Up here, madam.
Rose appeared breathless at the top of the stairs. Making the beds.
I'd have thought you'd be finished by now.
I've only just started, madam.
Huh,
Mrs. Corbett said contemptuously. She always seemed to expect her maid to have begun the next job, or even the one after that, leaving Rose with a constant feeling that she was way behind.
Well, get a move on, girl. I want you in uniform by 11 o'clock. The vicar and his wife are coming for coffee.
Yes, madam.
It was exceptionally warm for June, and there were beads of perspiration on Rose's brow when she returned to the Colonel's room and began to plump up pillows, straighten sheets, and tuck them firmly under the mattress. Colonel Max was Mrs. Corbett's son, a professional soldier presently home on leave. He was a much nicer person than his mother, very kind. She was always sorry when he had to return to his regiment. Mrs. Corbett, on the other hand, was never kind. She apparently thought the more Rose was harried, the harder she would work. But Rose already laboured as hard as she could. That morning she'd been up at 6, as she was every morning, to light the aga. On the dot of 7, Mrs. Corbett had been taken up a cup of tea, 2 slices of bread and butter, and the Times. The Colonel had been given his tea on the dot of 8, by which time his mother was having a bath. The coal scuttle had been filled, the washing had been hung on the line, the numerous clocks had been wound, and Mrs. Denning, the cook who lived in the village, had arrived to make breakfast. While the Corbetts ate, Rose sat down to her own breakfast, although more often than not the bell would ring, and she would scurry into the dining room to be met with complaints that the eggs were overdone, the kippers not cooked enough, or there wasn't enough toast, none of which was Rose's fault, but Mrs. Corbett behaved as if it was. Breakfast over, she'd start on the housework, shake mats and brush carpets, dust and polish the furniture, which had to be done every day apart from Sunday, Rose's day off, but only after 10 o'clock, and the aga had been lit, and if it was winter, fires made in the breakfast and drawing rooms, the morning tea had been served and the beds made. Today the housework would be interrupted because the Reverend and Mrs. Conway were coming for coffee, and she would have to change out of her green overall into her maid's outfit, a black frock with long sleeves, a tiny white lace-trimmed apron and white cap. Thus attired, Rose would answer the door and show the visitors into the drawing-room, where coffee and biscuits were waiting on a silver tray, and Mrs. Corbett would rise to greet them, her big, overpowdered face twisted in a charming smile. Rose wasn't required to show the visitors out. She would change back into the overall and get on with other things, cleaning the silver, for instance, or ironing, the job she disliked most. Mrs. Corbett examined the finished work with a hawk's eye, looking for creases in her fine silk underwear and expensive crepe de chine blouses. Even the bedding had to be as smooth as freshly fallen snow. Rose would be bitterly scolded if one of the pure Irish linen pillow slips hadn't been ironed on both sides, something she was apt to overlook.
"You'll make some man a fine wife one day,"
Mrs. Denning had said more than once.
"I can't imagine getting married," Rose usually replied.
She did so again today. Both women were in the kitchen, where the windows had been flung wide open, in the hope a breath of fresh air might penetrate the sweltering heat. A red-faced Mrs. Denning was preparing lunch, and Rose was sorting out yesterday's washing, putting it into different piles ready to be ironed. Mrs. Corbett was still entertaining the Conways in the drawing-room. She picked up the iron off the aga and spat on it. The spit sizzled to nothing straight away, and she reckoned it was just about right. She put another iron in its place.